take your Bibles, if you would, tonight, John chapter 2. John chapter 2. If you remember from John chapter 1 in verse 43, it said that the day following, Jesus would go forth into Galilee. And so he was on his way to Galilee when he saw Philip, and then Philip found Nathanael, and Philip brought Nathanael to Jesus. And so by the time he got to Galilee, he probably had six disciples. He probably had the two pairs of brothers, James and John and Andrew and Peter, and then Philip and Nathanael. They accepted him as the Christ based on a couple of them, what John the Baptist said, and then hearing him as he spoke, but they had not seen any other sign yet that he was, and that's going to change in the first part of this chapter. We're going to see the first of the signs that John includes in his gospel to show that that Jesus was indeed the Christ. Now, let's start with verses 1 and 2 tonight. And the third day, there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. John the Baptist was a loner. He didn't interact socially with many people. Jesus was different. He did. He was a social being. He interacted with people. If John the Baptist would have been invited to John the Baptist probably wouldn't have been invited to a marriage feast. And if he had been invited, he probably wouldn't have gone. But Jesus was invited on this occasion. He was often invited to social settings to have dinner with different people and things like that. Now, it's funny that the people of their day criticized them both for their positions. They called John insane because he didn't interact with people, and they called Jesus a man gluttonous and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. Now, they meant that as a critique of him, but a friend of sinners can also be interpreted as a sinner's friend. And I'm glad that Jesus was sinner's friend. I was one of those sinners he was a friend to, and most of you were as well. Jesus went to where people were. He went to where the public was, so that he could lead them to where he wanted them to be. So this is the first social occasion that's recorded that Jesus in the Bible that Jesus went to. Now, I'm sure as a younger man, before he started his public ministry, he went to wedding feasts and different things like this. But this is the first one that we read about in the Bible. It was in Cana of Galilee. Now, there was a Cana in Judea, and there were actually two places known as Cana in Galilee. One of them was about 3.5 miles northeast of Nazareth, the town where Jesus grew up. And the second one was about 8 miles north. Bible scholars are really not sure which one this wedding was in. It could have been either one of them and fit in with the timeline. The timeline, it says the third day. And the third day is probably the third day after Jesus started to Galilee, like we talked about in verse 43 of chapter 1. Those 3 days would give Jesus enough time to get to Nazareth and then either walk the 3.5 miles or the 8 miles to Cana in Galilee for the marriage feast. Now, the Bible says his mother was there. The tense of the verb was indicates that she was already there and was probably there for some time before Jesus got there. So even though they were there together, they probably didn't get there together. And notice what it says there, and the mother of Jesus was there. Here's an interesting fact. In the book of John, Jesus' mother's name, Mary, is not mentioned. Nowhere in the book of John. We know that she's married from the other Gospels, her name, Mary, is not mentioned in the Gospel of John. Notice, too, that there's no mention of Joseph here. Most Bible scholars think that he died earlier, probably when Jesus was about 16. Don't know that for sure, but that's what tradition says. And the fact that Jesus was invited, again, indicates that he, in the past, or was and was accustomed to going to occasions like this. Okay? Again, he grew up in Nazareth, just not very far from these towns. And so he was invited, and he went. Now, in this day, marriage, and what we're talking about here is not the marriage ceremony itself. For the Jews, marriage consisted of three things. It consisted of the contractual arrangement between the groom and the bride, usually made by the parents when the partner, the candidate, so to speak, were children. A lot of times they were made when they were children. I've talked to several parents lately, said, I wish we could do that today because I think I could pick a better partner for my child than they picked for themselves. And I'm not sure that that's true, knowing the parents as I do. But anyhow, that's the way it was back in this day. When the girl reached a marriageable age, she could decide if she wanted to go through with the contract. If she said yes, she was bound to it. There was no way that she could get out of it. Then there was the betrothal. It was more than our engagement, but not quite like our marriage. That would last up to a year. If there was any immorality on the part of the prospective bride during that year, it was punishable by death. Okay? And again, think about that when we read the story of Joseph, where he was willing to put away, when he found out that Mary was pregnant, willing to put her away privately. And then there was a marriage, okay? And after the marriage, the couple lived as husband and wife. And so it was the culmination of this process, and it was a very joyous occasion. And so like we do today, after the marriage ceremony itself, they had a feast. Now, it's a little bit different than today, because back in that day, it lasted 7 days. There could have been different guests invited on different days, and if you did not invite your friends to your marriage feast, it was a tremendous insult. In fact, the Jews had a saying, if you don't invite me to your wedding, you won't see me at your funeral. That's what they said. And if you were invited to a marriage feast, it was just as much as an insult if you did not go. And so Jesus was invited. He was called, and his disciples as well. Now look at verses 3 and 4. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus said unto him, they have no wine. And Jesus said unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. So sometime after Jesus got there, they had a problem at this wedding feast. They ran out of wine. Now, it was probably the last day of the feast. I mean, if they had them 7 days, it was probably this day 7. When Mary found out about it, when the mother of Jesus found out about it, she came to her son. Now, again, you might ask the question, why didn't she go to the governor of the feast? Why didn't she go to the bridegroom? Why did she come to Jesus? I mean, maybe she wanted to save the bridegroom the embarrassment of running out of wine. And the fact that she came to Jesus suggests that she thought that he could do something about it, about the fact that they'd run out of wine. Now, I think Mary depended on Jesus as her oldest son after Joseph died. She knew that he had a divine nature, and she was probably hinting to him when she came to him and said, they have no wine, that maybe he should use the power that he had to relieve this emergency, this social emergency. And Jesus replied. And we look at his reply, some people think it shows a lot of disrespect to his mother. He says, woman, what have I to do with thee? My hour is not yet come. And if you look at it simply, you could say, here's what Jesus was saying. He was saying, mother, this is not our concern. We're not the host. I'm not the host. You're not the hostess. We are invited guests. It's really not our problem. But if you look at it a little bit deeper, you get a couple other things out of it. notice that he called his mother woman. Woman, what have I to do with thee? Now again, some people see this as disrespectful on Jesus' part. But I would point out to you that the only two times, as recorded in the book of John, where Jesus spoke directly to his mother, both of those times he called her woman. He did it here. He did it as he hung on the cross and as he asked John, the writer of this gospel, to look after his mother. He said to his mother, he said to Mary, "Woman, behold thy son," looking at John. So again, only two times in the Gospel of John that he addressed his mother, he called her woman. In that day, woman was not a term of disrespect. In fact, it was a term of great respect. It was used by the Greeks in that day to address queens and other women of distinction. But the Greek word, juni, also, it conveyed a deep respect, but it also conveyed or involved the idea of separation. Of separation. So I have this great respect, but there's also a barrier. There's also separation between us. Now, I think Jesus was using the word. He knew exactly what he meant, and it involved both of those things. He respected Mary as his human mother, but he was reminding her that they now have a new relationship. It was no longer mother and son. Now he was the Christ, okay? He was no longer her son to be commanded. He was her savior to be believed. Later, he was going to say that his mother, brothers, and sisters are those who believe in him. And his relationship to Mary and to the others in his family were no longer based on genetics. It was a spiritual relationship. And so in dealing with his mother this way, Jesus shows us how we should regard Mary. We ought to respect her memory. We ought to show her honor as the one that God chose to be the earthly mother of his son. But it doesn't justify the exalted position that some have given her. Okay? It doesn't. Jesus never exalted her in that way, and neither should we. Now, Jesus also said, "Mine hour is not yet come." We find Jesus saying that over and over in the Gospel of John. His hour that he talks about always refers to his death, when he was going to go to the cross, when God was going to demonstrate the great love that he had for us by sending his son to Calvary. And so he said, "Woman, mine hour is not yet come." What Mary, again, was suggesting him do was to perform a miracle, somehow provide wine. That's what Satan asked Jesus to do when he tempted him in the wilderness. Hey, perform a miracle. Turn these rocks into bread. Cast yourself down. Because, God said he was going to protect you. A similar situation would arise later when his half-brothers said, "Hey, the feast is at Jerusalem. You ought to go up and show yourself at the feast." And he said the same thing to his half-brothers, who weren't believers at that point. He said, "No, my time's not come yet. Your time's always here, but my time has not come yet." You see, Jesus was operating by a divine schedule. It was God's schedule, and not his mother or his half-brothers or Satan or anybody else was going to get him off of that schedule. He was sticking to the schedule that God gave him. And again, for Mary, I'm sure this had to be a hard time. I mean, it started here when he used this word woman and said, "Hey, we no longer have the relationship of mother and son that we had before." I think, again, when Remember when Mary and his brothers and sisters came to him, and somebody came in and said, "Hey, your mother and your family's outside." And Jesus looked around and said, "Well, my mothers and my brothers and my sisters are those that believe. Are those that believe." And then at the cross, when he said, "Woman, behold thou son," talking about John. That's where it ended. I mean, and again, I think I think Mary started to feel there in the wedding at Canaan, and felt it when Jesus looked at the crowd and said, "Hey, these that believe are my mother and my brothers and my sisters." And again, at the cross, I think she felt the point of that sword going through her heart that Simon talked about in the temple when Mary and Joseph brought Jesus in to dedicate him as a baby. And Simon was there, the one that God had promised, "You're not going to die until you see the Messiah." And he took the little baby Jesus in his arms and told Mary, "The sword's going to go through your heart." And I think that's what happened. You see, Jesus is mindful. He was mindful of men's physical, social needs. But that was not the heart of his ministry. He met many of those needs in his ministry, but the center, the heart of his ministry was always the cross. It was always the cross. That's what he had his face set like a flint toward, the cross. Let's just look at a couple more verses and we'll be done. Verse 5, "His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. Jesus saith unto them, fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, draw out now and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it." So Jesus was concerned about this need that they had. I mean, even though he sort of rebuked his mom about it, but somehow Mary knew that he was going to do something, because she said to the servants, "Hey, whatever he says, just do it. Just do it." Now, at a feast like this, they would have containers of water for the purpose of ceremonial cleansing, okay? And John explained that in chapter 6 to the Greeks that we're reading. So maybe these pots were set in the courtyard next to the hall. there were 6 of them containing 2 or 3 firkins. Now, a firkin is about 8.5 gallons, okay? So 2 or 3 firkins would be somewhere between 17 and 25 and a half gallons of water in each of these pots. And there were 6 of them, so let's just assume they each had 20 gallons of water in them, somewhere between 17 and a half and 25. So there was 120 gallons of water, okay? So I don't know if you ever thought about this before, but when Jesus turned the water into wine, it was a lot of water, 120 gallons. So he said to the servants, "Go ahead and fill these pots to the top." And they did. And he said, "I want you to draw up now and bear unto the governor of the feast." Now, the governor of the feast was a servant that was in charge of all the arrangements. I mean, they set up the tables, they set up the couches, they planned the food, they planned the drink, they tasted the food and the drink before it was served to the guest. And so Jesus said, "Take, draw out of these pots and take it to the governor." Now, some people have asked, when did the water become wine? Okay? Some Bible scholars think when they filled the pots. Other Bible scholars think it didn't turn into wine until they drew it out and it turned to wine on the way to the governor of the feast. Doesn't make any difference. And I know people have argued about it. Was it fermented wine or was it unfermented wine? Did Jesus drink any of that wine while he was at the feast? Don't get hung up on that. Bible doesn't give us those answers. Just realize and take note what Jesus did. Again, this was the first sign that proved to his disciples, and there were 6 of them there, that he was indeed the Christ. Thank you for being here tonight. Let's stand together and we'll have a word of prayer.